गोपी जन वाला श्री वाराधारे गोपी जन वाला श्री वाराधारे यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना किरावनचारे यमुना तीरावनचारे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय राधा माधव गोपी जन वल्लभ देवराधारे गोपी जन वल्लभ यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना किरावनचारे यमुना किरावनचारे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे
Today is the day of the Canto 10th, Chapter 6, verse number 30, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nasta Prayesha Badreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamas Loke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Shishukavacha Iti Pranaya Baddhabhi Gopibhi Kritarakshanam Payaitva Stanam Mata Sanyavishayat Atmajam Shri Shuka Vacha Iti Pranaya Baddhabhir Gopi Bir Kritarakshanam Payaitva Sanam Mata Sanyavishayad Atmajam Shri Shuka Vacha Iti Pranaya Baddhabhir Gopi Bhir Kritarakshanam Payaitva Stanam Mata Sanyavishayad Atmajam Shri Shuka Vacha Iti Pranaya Baddhabhir Gopi Bhir Kritarakshanam Payaitva Stanam Mata Sanyavishayad Atmajam Shri Shuta Vacha Kavacha Nabatavir Lady devotees, anyone? Shri Shuka Vacha, Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Iti, in this way, Pranaya Baddhabir, who were bound with maternal affection, Gopibi, by the elderly gopis headed by Mother Yashoda. Kritarakshanam. All measures were taken to protect the child. Payaitva. And after that, feeding the child. Stanam. The nipple. Mata. Mother Yashoda, Sanyavishayat, made to lie down on the bed. Atmajam, her son. Translation of the verse. Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, all the gopis headed by Mother Yashoda were bound by maternal affection. After they thus chanted mantras to protect the child, Mother Yashoda gave the child a nipple of her breast to suck, and then got him to lie down on his bed. The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When a baby drinks milk from the breast of his mother, This is a good sign of health. So the elderly gopis were not satisfied with chanting mantras to give protection to Krishna. They also tested whether their child's health was in order. When the child sucked the breast, this confirmed that he was healthy. And when the gopis were fully satisfied, they had the child lie down on his bed. This purport is short, so we are going to read the next verse. Tavannandada yogopa maturaya vrajangata vilokya putanadeham babhuvur ativismita. Meanwhile, all the coward men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, returned from Mathura. And when they saw on the way the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, they were struck with great wonder. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Nanda Maharaj's wonder may be understood in various ways. First of all, the coward man had never before seen such a gigantic body in Vrindavan, and therefore they were struck with wonder. Then they began to consider where such a body had come from, whether it had dropped from the sky, or whether by some mistake or by the power of some mystic yogini they had come to some place other than Vrindavan. They could not actually guess what had happened, and therefore they were struck with wonder. Sri Shuka Vacha Iti Pranaya Baddha Bir Gopi Bir Kritarakshanam Paya Itvastanam Mata Sanya Veshayad Atmajam Tavananda Dayo Gopa Maturaya Vrajangata Vilokya Putanam Deham Babhuvur Ativismita. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, all the gopis, headed by Mother Yashoda, were bound by maternal affection. After they thus chanted mantras to protect the child, Mother Yashoda gave the child the nipple of her breast to suck, and then got him to lay down on his bed. Meanwhile, all the coward men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, returned from Mathura. And when they saw on the way the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, they were struck with great wonder. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavancha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Bancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All this story happened in Gokula, not exactly in Vrindavan. Gokula is on the other side of the Yamuna, while the Vrindavan forest is on the eastern side of the Yamuna. At this time, the cowherd men and boys, they were living in a group of villages on the western side of the Yamuna. And these villages are famous as Gokula, where Sri Krishna appeared, and Raval. This is the place where Srimati Radharani appeared. And even today, there are many small villages, all quite near to the banks of the Yamuna, up to Dauji. Dauji is a very nice town. I don't know how many of you visited Dauji, but it's definitely a place to visit. Dauji is the name for Balaram. There is a very beautiful deity of very big deity of Balaram, and it's very difficult to see because every day, at any time, you find a crowd, so many people, and there is a nice market in front of the temple. Gentle people, and you really had to struggle to see Balaram. The door are not open a very long time, so you can have just a glimpse of the Lord staying there. After Dauji, the Vrajamandal finished, so there is no Dauji is like on the border of the of Vrajamandal, so that is the limit. After that, it's India. It's not anymore Vrajamandal. So after the cowherd men saw Putana, they were wondering. They were a little confused. We'll see the story in the following verses. So they were wondering what could have happened. At first, they did not understand that it was a demon. After the incident with the cart, they thought that it was just an incident, but this time it was a demon, it was a real demon. It was easy to see, there was a body. The Shakatasura demon, you could not really see at the beginning that it was a demon. So in this verse, we have the picture of the coward man returning from Mathura, wondering, what is that? And in this verse, they did not realize yet that that it was a big demon who tried to kill Krishna. After the death of Putana demon, there is a nice place near the Nanda Maharaj Palace in Gokula. You can go from the main street. You turn right and you go to Nanda Maharaj house, and actually it could be 20 meters, not much, from Nanda Maharaj house. There is exactly the place where Putana trying to kill Krishna, and where the body fell down. There is a nice statue deity of Putana with Krishna on her breast. And all the devotees going to Gokula, they circumambulate the place, remembering Krishna's pastime to kill the Putana demon. So after that, few other incidents happened, like the Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon, and few others. And then the coward man decided that maybe this part of the country is not safe. They thought like that, it's not safe. So better we find some other place. So it was not particularly strange for them to change, because they were continuously changing places. The word Vraja, it comes from the Sanskrit word Vraj, which means to go, to move. So in Vrajavasi, there were groups of coward men who used to move places to live. So they sent some men to see what could be a nice place to stay, to build up a safer place, build up new towns, etc. And they found on the eastern, on the western side of the of the Yamuna, a nice forest called Vrindavan. So they when all the coward men moved everything, the cows and everything with them, they crossed the Yamuna, and they stayed for some time on the outskirts of this forest, the Vrindavan forest. They didn't stay just in the middle of the forest at that time, where there is the today modern city of Vrindavan. There was nothing at that time. It was just trees and fields, and it was a forest. So they stayed on the outskirts of this forest, and Nanda Maharaj and his clan, they set up provisionally in a place that today is called as what's the name of the Chatikara. Chatikara is a village, it's still existing. When you arrive from the highway going from Delhi, then on your right you see Chatikara, it's a town. And that place you turn left and you go to Vrindavan, you turn right, you go to Chatikara and then to Radhakunda. So in that place where is the modern, well, modern, it's not really modern anyway, where is the nowadays place of Chatikara, that is the place where Nanda Maharaj stayed for some time, waiting for the final, for the definitive towns to be built up. And but since there were many of them, so they stayed in different places, like Maharaja Vrishabhanu with his clan and coward men and coward women, etc. They set up a few kilometers away from Chatikara in a place that is called Ral. Ral is a smaller place, still existing. If you don't read Devanagari, you cannot understand. It's not written in Roman letters, so you cannot read. I read Devanagari, so it's I could see. That's Ral. It's the smaller place. That is the place where Maharaj Vrishabhanu stayed for some time, waiting for the masons and to build up the places. And soon, after some time, Nandagram and Varshana and all the other towns, still existing towns of the government, they were built up, so they went, and there is the place where... But for some time of their life, Radha and Krishna lived on the outskirts of the Vrindavan forest, and that is the place where they had a lot of pastimes. Of course, they continued to have pastimes when they went to their final destination. So this is the story, short. This is a long story, short, how the cowherdmen decided, been feeling threatened by the demons, they decided to change and vacate their towns of Gokula, Ravale, and all the other tens of places they had. There were many. There were thousands, hundreds of thousands of them. It was a big move, and they had millions of cows. So as you can see, they everyone has a tendency to find a life which is peaceful. Nobody likes to stay in a place where there are demons, where there are so many dangers. So it's natural for the soul to be happy, to be peaceful, and to dedicate to better things. This is how the spiritual world is made. The spiritual world is a happy place. You know? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us a system by which we can become happy even in this world. And our philosophy is a happy philosophy. You know, prasadam is good because we have to be happy. And the temples are cleaned because people have to feel that they are welcome in a place. A dirty place, nobody wants to come. You know? And the devotee says to be very gentle, very kind to everyone coming to the temple, because we want people to be happy. And gentleness is the natural way of behaving for those who are happy. Those who are miserable cannot be gentle with anyone because they are angry, because they are envious. I am suffering so much. This person surely does not suffer as much as me. So I want to make him miserable by treating him badly. So in the temple is a happy place. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us a philosophy of happiness. He chanted, danced, he traveled all over India, chanting, dancing, and speaking philosophy. That is our life. This is our philosophy. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, he was 24 when he took sannyas. He was very young. And 6 years, so until he was 30, he traveled all over India, especially in South India, for propagating his Sankirtan movement. One day, while traveling, he arrived to a very important city at that time. It was a center of culture called Sriranga Kshetra. And that was a very important point of Sri Vaishnavism. Sri Vaishnavism, as you all know, you are all pandits, of course. And there are only four bona fide sampradayas, schools. And from them issue many paramparas, who are secondary lines. So we are part, we as ISKCON, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are part of the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, starting from Krishna, Brahma, and then down to Madhvacharya, and then to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why it's called Brahma Madhva Gaudiya. Gaudiya means Lord Chaitanya. Gaudadesh is the place where Lord Chaitanya appeared. And Sampradaya, that's our line. Of course, the our Sampradaya and Parampara is a long, long story. But basically, that's where we come from. That's where the founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, was part of this Sampradaya. And in South India at that time, there was another Sampradaya, was called Sri Sampradaya, also called Lakshmi Sampradaya, was predominant. While even today, Sri Vaishnavism is very important in South India and much less in the North. North, the Brahma Sampradaya, the Gaudiya Vaishnava in Bengal and in Vrindavan and other, but the Kumara Sampradaya is also quite known in North India. South India, it was the place of the Sri Sampradaya. So he arrived in a house in Sriranga Kshetra or a very noble Brahmana family. It was very very important family of the three brothers. It is not known if they had more brothers or sisters, but these three brothers, they were very, very known in Sriranga. Their name were Venkata Bhakta, Prabodhananda Sarasvati, Tirumala Bhakta. Tirumala Bhatta. Bhatta means professor, more or less. So they were very, very famous. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go and visit them, and they received this young sannyasi very nicely, very respectfully, and they allowed him to speak. And at that time, there was one discussion between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Venkata Bhakta, and of course his two brothers, Prabodhananda Sarasvati, Tirumala Bhakta also, were present. Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said one thing that that put Venkata Bhakta a little nervous. Who remembers what this was that? He said, Lakshmi Devi, Lakshmi, they are from the Sri Sampradaya, Lakshmi Sampradaya. He said, Lakshmi Devi could not enter, didn't succeed in being a gopi, in participating to the Krishna's, Radha Krishna Dansa Rasa. She could not, because she has not the qualification. So can you imagine the three brothers hearing that their goddess, their main link to the Supreme Personality of God, could not do something. It was unacceptable for them. And then there was this debate. It was a quite lively debate between Lord Chaitanya and the three Bhattas from Shilanga Kshetra. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that incapability is not in terms of tattva, but in terms of rasa. And the Sri Sampradaya does not teach much about rasa. It's all tattva. Tattva means basically philosophy. While rasa is something different. Rasa comes from the heart. It comes from the core of the soul. Philosophy is an explanation, while rasa is something you live inside your being, in the deepest core of your being. So in rasa, there can be things you cannot even explain philosophically, because it's just your life. While philosophy has to be scientific, you must explain. In rasa, you can also not explain. You can say simply, this is how I like it. There was this discussion, I remember, in Vrindavan. We were a group of senior devotees, and we were talking about Veda and Vedas and the gopis. And there was some devotees saying that the gopis would always stick to the Vedas. Well, actually, the devotees say no. The Vedas are made of the free behavior or free willing of the gopis. The gopis in the spiritual world do not obey to any rule, because in the spiritual world there is no rule, because there is no need of rule, because everything is perfect. Rule is made to rule out mistakes and embrace whatever is right. That is the meaning of a rule. You follow it to be right. But in the spiritual world, there is no wrong. So everything is right. So everything you do, even if one day you do something and the next day you do something opposite, in the material world, if you do something right, the next day you do something wrong, you do something opposite, then you are wrong the next day. But in the spiritual world, it's just variety. Variety means today I do this and this is perfectly right, tomorrow I do exactly the opposite, and it will be equally right, because in the spiritual world everything is absolute. So Veda, or the most intimate knowledge of the spiritual world and the interaction in the spiritual world, are made by the observations of what the gopis, Krishna, the gopas, and all the inhabitants of the spiritual world, they do or they say or they feel. It's just observation. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained why Lakshmi Devi could not enter Dansa Rasa, because of the rasa. Her particular rasa did not allow her to enter in a place where a different rasa were going on. So even in the spiritual world, there are incompatibilities of rasa. This is called rasa basa. In the material world, rasa basa means something right and something wrong. In the spiritual world, everything is right. Still, if you have an incompatible rasa, you cannot participate to the other rasa, because your very being prevent you to participate. You have no you don't know what to do. You cannot participate. And Lakshmi Devi had a rasa which contemplates Lakshmi was seeing the Supreme Personality of God as someone to worship, as someone to respect. This is a sort of type of rasa, and reverence. So someone who thinks of the Supreme Personality of God in that way cannot play with him. Can you imagine to go to the most important person, you know, the president of the United States, and say, "Hey, Obama, how are you?" "No, how are you both?" You can't do that. Why? Because you think of the president as someone very important. "Oh, good morning, President Obama." That's what you do. Because this is the way, this is your relationship. But his wife, you know, his wife is like Barack. He embraces him. Or his daughters. His daughter, they jump on his lap. You don't jump on Obama's lap. That's your relationship. It's in awe and reverence. So if Lakshmi Devi did not change her mentality, her rasa, what she had done in the Dansa Rasa, where the gopis, they joke with Krishna and they kiss him and embrace him, you know, she would just look in wonder. So that's why Lakshmi Devi could not participate to the Dansa Rasa. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained all this philosophy, and it was days and days of conversation, and the three brothers, they were totally convinced, and they became Gaudiya Vaishnava. At that time, Vyankata Bhakta had a very young son. That happened in 1511. This is when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the Bhattas brothers. At that time, Vyankata Bhakta had a small son, a child, called Gopal, and he was 7 years old at that time. 7, 8, almost 8. He was born in 1503. So he was quite young. And although he was young, he was also present during Lord Chaitanya discussion on the science of rasa, etc. And he felt extremely attracted to Lord Chaitanya. And when he grew up, he took initiation from his uncle, Prabodhananda Sarasvati, who at the time had become a Gaudiya Vaishnava. You can understand that Prabodhananda Sarasvati was a Gaudiya Vaishnava by his books. There is one very famous book written by Prabodhananda Sarasvati called Vrindavan Mahima Amrita. Prabodhananda Sarasvati went to Vrindavan, and there where he left his body. And so Gopal asked Lord Chaitanya when he was small if he should go away with him. And he said, "Yes, you should come with me, but right now you should stay with your father and uncle. Stay here. When the time will be ripe, then you should go to Vrindavan." Gopala Bhatta, that became Goswami after, when I was a little, grew up, and his father and mother left the body, he went to Vrindavan, and he stayed under the care of Rupa Sanatana. At the time, they were already there, and he built the very famous Radharaman temple. At that time, when he started to build the temple, there was not a deity. The Radharaman deity did not. He wasn't there. He was building the temple, but there were no deity. So he went to the Himalayas, and because he wanted the Shalagram Shila, and he found 12 Shilas, and he brought them back in Vrindavan. When I came back to Vrindavan, he thought, actually, I'm not qualified to worship the Shalagram Shila. Better I go back. And I would put them back. He went to the Gandaki River, up to the Himalaya, and tried to put the Shilas back, but as for magic, the Shilas, they bounced back to him. He was putting them, and they returned back in his hands. And he tried many times, 12 Shilas, all the 12 Shilas, they were bouncing back from the river to his hands. So he accepted that the Lord wanted to be worshipped by him, and he kept these Shilas with him in a wrap, like in some cloth that he hanged on his neck. Even today, sadhus, this is what they do. They keep their Shilas in a wrap around the neck. And Shilas, we had to be careful in keeping Shilas, because I had the one question many years ago, and what is the difference between Shila and Murtis? So I went to the Radharaman temple, to the Padmanabha Goswami, who is the head of the main family of the Radharaman temple. I put him a question. He's an authority in deity worship, you know. He's been, now I'll tell you who, where they come from. We'll come to the story of the family, Radharaman servant's family. And he explained me that the difference is that the Murtis, like Radha Krishna, Gaura Nithai, you have to install them. You can serve the deities without being installed. You don't make offenses, and you take some good result of in your devotion. But you are not really forced to worship them. But when you install them, then it's forever. You have to continue forever to serve them, otherwise you do serious offenses. The Shilas, they don't need to be installed. They are already installed. So from the moment you take them, you have to ensure that you are going to serve them, to worship them, or you make offenses from the very first second you take them. That is the difference. Shilas do not need installation, while Murtis, they do. So one day, while he was returning back to Vrindavan, it happened a storm. He was near, my memory is going away. Haridwar. Haridwar is when you come down from the mountains, the first place you see when India becomes plain. So the first city that you meet is Haridwar. Haridwar is where the Ganga meet the plain. And it's a very beautiful place, a lot of sadhus, it's a wonderful place to stay. So there was a storm, and Gopalabhatta Goswami took shelter of a house of one sadhu there. He was a grihastha, he had no sons, and he was aggrieved by the fact that he had no sons. And Gopalabhatta Goswami said, "No, you are going to have sons, don't worry, I bless you to have sons." And the Brahmana was very happy to hear about that. And he said, "The first son I will send it to you, and he will become your main servant." And then many years after, his first son will come. Before this son came to Vrindavan, Gopala Bhatta Goswami received the visit of one very rich merchant. How you say merchant? A businessman. Merchant. Who arrived there, and he gave it a lot of donation of clothes for the deities, etc. But he had no deities. He had Shilas, but they are not a human form. So you cannot, you know, it doesn't have arms, it doesn't have legs, it doesn't have a body, a human body. So he did not, he could not utilize them. And he started to have the desire to to have a deity, a human form like deity. And one day, in a dream, one of his 12 Shilas, called Damodara Shila, appeared in his dream and he said, "Yes, I've come in a human form of life, human form." And then he woke up, he went to see Shilas, and one of the 12 Shilas, he became a very extremely beautiful Krishna deity. It's very, very beautiful. You have to see Radharaman. Whoever has not seen Radharaman, he has to see. It's very small. It's like this. Very beautiful. Gopal Bhatta Goswami was very happy. And he started to worship this deity who called Radharaman. Radharaman, that's the name of this Krishna. Who has no Radharani. It's just him. It's just Radharaman. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami started to worship this deity. He was worried, though, because he was getting old. He didn't know how to continue the service to Radharaman. So one day, he went back to the temple from the Yamuna. He found a young boy, waiting for him outside the door. And his name was Gopinath. Gopinath was the elder son of that Brahmana who was blessed by Gopala Bhatta Goswami to have sons. So he actually sent his first son to him, and he became the famous Gopinath Pujari Goswami, and he was the Pujari. So Gopala Bhatta Goswami told him, "Now you have to marry, so that your sons and your grandsons will continue the worship of Radharaman." But Gopinath, who in the meantime had taken initiation from Gopala Bhatta Goswami, he said, "I have made a vow of brahmacharya, a lifetime brahmacharya. So I don't want to marry." So there was another disciple, a very close friend of someone, says that this Damodar is name of this other one. Damodar was a disciple of Gopinath Pujari. Someone says that he was a disciple of Gopala Bhatta Goswami. Anyway, he accepted to marry, beget children, so that they will continue the worship of Radharaman in the future. The present Goswami's family or Radharaman temple are the blood successors of that Damodar Pujari, who continue his line of Pujari. Even today, Radharaman deity is very nicely worshipped, and they sing so nicely. How they sing is wonderful, you know. They have so many nice singers. They are like Gandharvas. They play and sing very sweetly. Gopala Bhatta Goswami wrote a lot of books. He was a spiritual master of many, many important disciples. Who know the most known and important disciple of Gopala Bhatta Goswami? He was the most important personality. The great Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya was like the most important acharya of the second generation after Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, disappearance of that time. So he wrote many books, and he co-writed the Haribhakti Vilas with Sanatana Goswami and Sakriya Deepika, and a lot of very important scriptures and shastras has been written by Gopala Bhatta Goswami. He lived about 75 years, so I think he disappeared in 1572 or 1573. So anyway, we spoke about a demon Putana and the coward man, how they moved from Gokula to the other side of the Yamuna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveling in south, the happy spirit of Krishna consciousness, And I just wanted to say something on Gopala Bhatta Goswami. Now, if there is any question, we have 5-10 minutes actually. Yes, yeah. No, I didn't see it, but I was told. Yes.
My question has to do with presenting Krishna's pastimes to the public. For example, when people come into our temple, they're seeing all these beautiful paintings or distributing Krishna's books. And sometimes, you know, there's a lot of questions that are brought up. Oh, this is the little boy, you know, and this 12-foot demon. This sounds like a fairy tale. So I was wondering, what basic proof can you actually offer, say, for the general public, confirm that this is actually real reality?
To people who are not devotees, we should tell tattva. We should tell philosophy. And we should follow what Srila Prabhupada did. And it's very clear the way Srila Prabhupada wanted us to preach is how he wrote the Krishna book. He wrote the Krishna book with so much philosophy that the pastimes is like, how you say that in English, diluting? No, that's not. Well, like when you have something which is very strong at the taste, you put water inside. Diluting them with a lot of philosophy. He would explain philosophy. Why? To break a wrong atmosphere, a wrong feeling, to break it down, to bring back the person to reality of what we are or where we are at right now. So if we say only pastimes and we don't break it down in philosophy, then people will start to have the doubts that you are mentioning. Then why Krishna is a small boy? How can he defeat such a big monster like Putana, who was touching the clouds? He was so tall and all these things. So then we should explain the philosophy. I say, so first of all, you have to accept that there is another world, that this material world is not the only world existing, that there is a spiritual world. In the spiritual world there is a God, and you have to accept God. Otherwise there is no point of telling any lila. We have to make the people accepting that there must be a God. The three topics we have to discuss with people are first the spirituality of the self, that we are different from the body. And the second, the existence and the nature of God. And third is the relationship we have with God. Unless all these three topics are not clear, then lilas are unnecessary, actually can be detrimental to people coming closing to our philosophy. Lilas only are just stories, and they are told to devotees. We are all devotees here, that's why I was talking so much story. But when you talk Bhagavad Gita in Sunday class or when you preach to people, you don't tell Gopala Bhatta Goswami story, you know. You can tell other stories maybe, but philosophy is more important because you have to bring these people to a ground of rationality. Our philosophy is based, is the more rational philosophy existing in this world. We can explain everything. So before using the or appealing to the sentiment, to the spiritual sentiment of the people, You have to purify them. And philosophy is the tool for purification. So no lilas, it's the philosophy. And when they look at to the paintings and they see Krishna dancing with the gopis, etc., you explain that this is a spiritual world. This is totally different. Do you accept the existence of the spiritual world? And do you accept that this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world? So, won't you like to dance with beautiful women or a beautiful men? Would you like to do with, you know, a nice music and flutes and mridangas and dancing and joking and laughing? This is what we want to do. This is our perfect life. We have ruined so much our life that even eating today has become difficult. Even having a house, even having a barrack, people have to work from the day to night, every day of their lives, just to maintain this body. Oh, this is so foolish, because everything is already there. We don't need to pay dollars and dollars and apple, because the apple is free. It comes from the earth. God gave us free. Why we should work to have to pay an apple? We just go and take it. You know, we just take care of the earth, of the trees, and we put some water who comes from, you know, you see how much water comes from the sky. Tonight we had tons of water coming down. You know, and everything is there. Krishna is giving us everything. We make life so unnecessarily complicated. So you can explain, try to imagine what it could be life if we had no the hindrance of this body, that we don't need. And you explain the difference between matter and spirit. So philosophy is for people who come. And when they become more advanced, and when they have understood the philosophy, when they know Jiva Tattva and Paramatma Tattva, and when they know all the Tattva, when there's no Karma Yoga, the science of action, this is a very important topic. Karma Yoga, I mean, it's how we should act. When you are alive, what do you do? You do something. So see how there is no a living soul who doesn't do something. You see? So since action and life are directly correlated, is correct? Correlated. Karma Yoga, which is the action of devotional, or the science of devotional action, is very important. People must know how to act, how to do things. So this is another very important lesson. This is the part of the second and third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. First, Krishna tells us that we are not this body, we are spirit soul. And then immediately he begins explaining the science of action. And only after he explains other things, which are secondary, compared to the importance of the spirituality of the self and the science of action. So I would strongly suggest to all the preachers to not talk about lilas, but talk about philosophy. And our philosophy has to be understood by every one of us, and we have to become very expert in presenting our philosophy and telling them God exists. And when they say, and when they will reply, prove me that God exists, you reply, prove me that God does not exist. And then you'll make them understand that it's way more reasonable, the existence of a God, than the non-existence. Way more reasonable. Tell me one thing that had no cause. Tell me one thing. This temple, somebody did it. You, somebody did you. And everything, every car, every word, every action, everything is made by someone living, someone with intelligence, someone. So how is it possible that all this perfection, the sun rise up every day at the same time or at a certain scheduled time, which is always the same? So this is mathematics. You know, this is just, you can tell by a mathematic operation, by a mathematic formula, exactly the second that the sun will come up from the horizon, and he will come up, and he will come up at that time, exactly. So this is mathematic. It's, someone did it. It's not possible that it came out from chaos. How is it possible that something so perfectly organized, it comes from the most unorganized thing thinkable, which is an explosion? Have you ever seen anything organized coming from an explosion? Can you put some bricks, something there, then put some dynamite, make it explode, then a house comes out? Or anything which is organized coming from an explosion? Explosion is just something that the most unorganized thing thinkable. So the most, according to the material scientist, the most organized thing, which is the creation, comes out from chaos. Oh, this is the stupidest thing you can say. This is the most unreasonable religion, you know. Ever science, the modern science is the most unacceptable fideistic religion, totally based on blind faith. Any religion, even the most elementary religion, like Christianity, the way it's been presented today, etc., other, which are quite elementary, I can say, I'm born in Rome, so I studied, I know what it is. So it's even that is much more acceptable. Even that, at least faith and a God and the Son of God, there's some rationality behind that. But material science has zero rationality.
In this conversation, the devotee at a certain point is accepting the inconceivable potency of God, achinta shakti. There's this inconceivable aspect to, just like one simple example would be that Krishna and Balaram, when they were being chased by Kaliyavana, and so it's described that they went up an 88-mile-high mountain, and they jumped from this mountain. And this mountain was somewhere between Mathura and Vrindavan. Now, how could, in 5,000 years, how could an 88-mile-high mountain suddenly disappear? It's not there. So it seems fictitious. It seems like it's made up. Well, how could an 88-mile mountain just vanish off the face of the earth?
Yes.
So you see, so there's a certain inconceivable thing here, like how could a woman suddenly become 12 miles tall? There's like a example after example of inconceivable experience. Mm. So I was wondering how you can actually, how you could explain that, even for us as devotees, to solidify our faith.
Yes. The word inconceivable does not always mean that you'll never be able to conceive it. Unconceivable often refers to something you cannot understand now. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whoever has more than 40 years, you know, we could not understand a lot of things, and now we can understand because of maturity. And 100 years ago, if you would tell anyone that one day will exist one weapon, just one weapon who can erase an entire city, oh, they will say, oh, this is fictitious. It is totally fictitious, impossible. Why? Because we cannot understand it now. So this is a very naive and immature way of approaching reality, that something that we cannot understand now, it's impossible. Oh, that is the disposition of God. Whatever he could not do it or could not understand, because it's absolute, then does not exist. Because God must understand everything. If he does not understand, that means it does not exist. But this is not our position. If we don't understand something, we had to conclude that most likely is something that one day we could understand, but right now we cannot understand. So this is a very intelligent way of approaching knowledge, being little humble and understand that I cannot even see what is behind this wall. Does not mean that behind the wall there is nothing. It means that I am limited. And after, when time will go by and will mature, a lot of things that today we cannot understand, then we'll be able to understand. But even in the material science, the greatest scientist said, Einstein, said that there are dimensions in this same material world that we cannot perceive, because the world and our senses are differently dimensioned. We can see a certain organization of creation, but the creation is much more complex. We cannot see it. Our eyes is made of three dimensions, so we can perceive three dimensions, but the universe, according to the greatest scientist of the past century, he said that it was based on of multi-dimension. And even the Bhagavatam is saying that. How can we understand the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, Shukadeva Goswami was described the universe in a totally different way that we perceive. He was talking about the universe like plants, you know, mandals, while we perceive planets floating in the universe. So is that fictitious too? Of course not. And that is very well explained by Maharaj Yudhisthira, was telling the story of a conversation between Brahma and Narada, when Narada was explaining that this universe is enormously complex and is made of many dimensions. Many dimension means that according to your perspective, you can perceive it differently. The same universe, different people will perceive it differently. So a perfect yogi like Shukadeva Goswami was perceiving another perspective of the universe. It was not fictitious. It was another dimension that you cannot approach, you cannot, until you don't get to that dimension. So it is obvious that the creation is not made only the way we perceive. But by developing, like the great yogis, who can, in fraction of seconds, it can erase the distance by traveling millions of miles in one second. How is that possible? Well, because they can enter into another dimension where the distance is differently related with. Just like, how is it possible that Radha Krishna will bring the cows from Nanda Gram to Vrindavan? You know, it's about 40 kilometers. If you go there, it's maybe 50. It's a long way from Nanda Gram to Vrindavan. Sometimes even in Govardhan, it's about 20 kilometers. Every day, cows would make 20 kilometers to go to pasture. That is not possible. So it is evident that only the arrogance of people they want to constrict knowledge to the very small, perimeter of the present knowledge. In this way, they cut themselves out of an enormous horizon of knowledge that is there only because of arrogance. And they cannot understand that the creation, material and spiritual, is way, way, way wider and bigger of the small frog-like, you remember the story of the frog, well, that how is it possible such a big mountain, you know, just disappeared, etc. That's a well-like type of vision. We have to enlarge our vision. And when they will be completely awestruck by the complexity and beauty and craftsmanship of the of Krishna, how he designed this world in such a wonderful way.
I heard in on a lecture series in Vrindavan, there was this by my Guru Maharaj on the Brahma Samhita, and there's a discussion explained by Jiva Goswami and Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati about Adhara Shakti, the potency of Lord Balaram. And it was specifically in relationship to this example that you're describing about the cows. And it's described that the Vrindavan is like a 1,000-petaled lotus. So the Adhara Shakti can make this lotus close to accommodate Krishna's desire. So if Krishna wants to go from Nandigram, say, to the Jamuna with the cows, then the lotus will close. So within a few moments, they can actually go to the Jamuna. And then the lotus can expand to accommodate Krishna's desire. So literally millions of cows and cowherd boys can be sporting there. So it has this ability to expand and contract.
In this case, we have this mechanism. In other cases, we have other mechanism. Whatever it is, the creation is not made only the way we can perceive of in this moment, because even that is inconceivable. If you explain that in the spiritual world, the people do not need to walk, because the place you need to walk to, it will come nearer to you, they will tell you are crazy. Just like, you know, to get, you know, today I